satisfy
those processes. But if you don't own them all the way through the harvest, so if you're not using that as a way to measure your value, then you've lost one of the cornerstones of that added value process. If you don't stick to your guns and use proven sires that have those accuracies so that we know that they're going to produce those kind of results, I think again that second leg of that stool just got pulled out from under you. So it's you know, I could go on and on and on and on that one, but it is definitely a scientifically proven process.
And there's tremendous progress that's been made in that whole area. I think we can create cattle that are very, very predictable based on the genetic information. Bob, thoughts in that whole area of what you've seen? Both of you have programs, I'm sure, that where they do the calves do go through the whole system, that the value of genetics shows up quickly, but just comment in general on what you've seen in both selling purebred cattle as well as being a part of some of these alliance-type programs.
Well, I think that our particular approach is we go to the end point and see what the carcass specifications are, and then we work our way backwards. The groups that I'm involved with, the carcass specs are probably a little tighter than some programs. Our ribeye specs are 12 to 14 inches, less than 4/10 back fat. We like them below yield grade 3 and around a 750 weight carcass. So as we do that, then we work back on the genetic side and say, what is it going to take to produce that, what we call the ideal carcass? And so we start targeting bulls that will work on cows that can fit those parameters, because there's premiums based on those what we call bullseye specs. There's a little wider range that we call target specs that we go on. We've taken it probably a little bit further in our operation, and we ultrasound all of our commercial replacement females and use that as a culling criteria within our program. One thing that, as we chase some of these extremes that maybe some of the branded beef programs do, we find that back on the cow herd side, some of those aren't as profitable as we'd like. So one thing that we try and do is we try and stay in the middle. We get rid of the little ribeyes, we get rid of the big ribeyes, and we try and pick out of the middle, and then we try and take that entire population and move it a direction that we want. And so that's kind of our goal, but we try and use those tools. But, you know, if you look at the consumer today, I mean, you'd think that I'm a seed stock guy and that my ultimate customer would be a commercial man, but the way we look at it is our ultimate customer is the consumer, and the commercial guy is the avenue to get to our ultimate customer. But when she's paying $17 for a ribeye and $27 for a fillet, I think we owe it to her as an industry that if they're going to pay that much money and we're going to increase that dollar amount, that we give them a good eating experience 100% of the time. And I think that falls back on our shoulders as producers, that we have a responsibility and we've got pride in ownership that we have to produce that quality product every time. And genetics are going to be a key role in that process.
Les? You look at it from a little different perspective. You do a lot of buying. What do you like to see in terms of information on the genetic side or carcass side, and how do they make that work for them?
That's probably a pretty difficult question for me to ask, or for me to answer, just because I'm not into seed stock issues. I mean, we trade volume. There's no doubt about that. You know, everybody, black is beautiful right now. However, in saying that, in the last 5 years, we've probably decreased the quality of the black cattle that we have across the United States, not increased, because everybody is using seed stock. Not everybody can have the best seed stock bull. Not everybody can afford the best seed stock bull. And so what we have found, I don't know in the Northwest, but I can tell you in the South and Southeast, we've moved a little bit in the opposite direction by keeping some seed stock in the programs it normally wouldn't, because everybody's clamoring for black. So I guess I do look at it from a little different perspective. run as good a quality cattle as you can afford to run, and be profitable. Not everybody can run the top end though. And the consumer, in general, if we're going to keep increasing demand, isn't the lady that's going to walk in there and pay $27 for a fillet, and she's not going to be the one that pays $15 a pound for a ribeye. She's going to be the one that catches it on sale. So that's the one that moves the bulk of the items that we as a beef industry have to produce. Now, saying that doesn't mean that we can have any less of a positive experience than what we've had. Once again, from my perspective and the perspective of the bulk of the people that I sell cattle to, which tend to be the big corporate guys, do the best that you can afford to do, but once again, you can't lose sight of profitability. And I know y'all are probably tired of hearing me say that, but all in all, that's what it boils down to.
Mike, I think you got something you want to
add. I think something needs to be said here, too. We collect a lot of carcass data for a lot of producers that don't retain ownership. And if you're the kind of producer that keeps excellent records and has cows individually identified, has a way to at least know approximately which sires are in which pasture, and no birth dates, and you get that information back, and it can be extremely valuable on sorting and culling your cow herd and managing your cow herd, and it will be profitable for you even without retaining ownership on those animals. But if you don't meet all of those criteria before you get that carcass data back, in my view, it has almost no value. Because I have seen set after set after set after set of that carcass data come back, and when you get down and you analyze it at the end, guess what? Those cattle are all about average. You'll have one that's worth a carcass that's worth $1,600, and you'll have one that's worth $800. Almost every set of cattle has that range in it. So if you can't do something about that diversity with your record keeping system, my first advice would be do something about it with your record keeping system. But don't spend a lot of money getting carcass data if you can't do something about it.
But I'll make a comment. We talk about the carcass traits being the most highly heritable traits. But let's say you come to me and say, I have a program and I want to do this particular thing and I need to start breeding for it today. That animal that I start on today, you will not see that animal be killed or the results of that animal be killed for 5 years. So, I don't have my watch on. So it's still a very slow process, even if we start today.
It's the nature of the cattle business that we live in, is that what you start today in the breeding program, it takes a while till the consumer sees that product. Along those lines of genetics, these folks are getting pretty specific. Question from the audience is, where do you see genetic markers, tests such as Agenity and GeneStar and these type of things fitting into genetic selection? We've been talking EPDs. Where do the DNA technology fit in terms of providing information on these calves? Who wants to tackle that one to start with?
Why don't you go?
Okay. I think we're just right on the front of this DNA technology. We talk about, marbling, markers. We talk about tenderness. I don't know how many they have identified for marbling, let's say 4, 5, 6, or 7. There could be 60 of them. And so it is a very useful tool. It's in the infancy stage as far as I'm concerned. But it is another piece of information that we can put into an EPD that will add accuracy to that information. So if I'm just going to go buy sires off of a DNA test, I don't think that the accuracy is there yet. I don't think that they've found enough markers yet to utilize that data strictly on itself. But if you incorporate that data to add if you just incorporate that with actual carcass data, ultrasound data, DNA technology, incorporate that into an EPD, our accuracy levels are going to go so much higher, so much quicker. But it's just another piece of information that we can use in the puzzle.
Mike?
Well, we've just gone through a year where we've had some huge black eyes in our industry and in the meat industry with recalls. And one of the things that I can tell you, being exposed to retailers at the level I have for the last 4 or 5 years, is I can tell you that they've made concerted efforts over time to drive this industry. You think that's a sign from above? into using traceability to limit their exposure. Okay? So, although I believe that we'll use these kind of identification things for a multitude of different marketing processes, I still believe that we're going to see a desire for traceable meat products to meet these consumer demands. We heard again from the AMI president this morning about a lot of their customers wanting to have some kind of a story behind their beef. I'm not sure I buy all that, but I'm just telling you that there is more and more discussion about food safety, limiting the size of recalls, limiting, you know, just because one of those recalls, you weren't an investor in Tops, doesn't mean that didn't cost you money. I can assure you them going out of business cost everyone in this room some money. So I would answer the question, I'm not sure that some of those specific markers are the first frontier for DNA technology. I'm not so sure just general meat traceability and tying it to individual record-keeping systems in some kind of a traceable format isn't going to have more value, and not from a mandatory standpoint, but from a voluntary standpoint.
And certainly some countries, Mike, are making a lot more progress on that than we have. And it's something that if we can't do it, we're going to have some challenges. A number of different areas that we need to still address. One of those is that certainly has not caused any controversy in the cattle industry is this whole area of national animal identification. So let's talk a little bit about identifying cattle, the value of an RFID tag, just identified cattle in general, where we're going to be at as an industry. Is that going to add value? If you were to offer advice to these folks here in terms of what you think they should be doing, you would tell them what? Well, let's try it. That may be an omen in terms of how often to change questions. Okay, Les, you get to start.
I'm going to tell you from a different perspective. I think it's added value.
Look, you need to speak up a little bit there. Still? I'm having trouble hearing you. I'm getting some high signs from out there.
Higher?
Most people tell me to stay quiet.
That better back in the back?
Okay.
I can do that. I think it's already added value. To the MFA health program, to some of the things that we're doing in Texas, with especially those smaller producers, I think the RFID program has already added value. Some of the commingled sales that we face, the ability for people to take 30 and 40 and 50 calves and work with several thousand other calves, commingle them and get value out of them, I think that's the most direct implication. I will tell you that I am up here on the panel, and I am for mandatory ID, so I think it's easily implemented. Not so much for traceback purposes, but for marketing purposes, I think it would be extremely beneficial. So I would say short-term, it's already added. Long-term, I hope it is something we implement in the industry, because I don't think it's that difficult. I think it translates some of the cool issues and some of the other issues out there. So from my perspective, I'm a proponent of it. It's not very expensive to get done, and that's kind of where I'm at.
Mike?
When we first started using RFIDs, either as a mandatory component of our tag set or as an option, I'd say we probably got zero requests from feeders and from buyers of those cattle based on an RFID scan. Today, 100% of those requests on 100% of the animal are made through scans of RFID tags. Now, the other point that I want to make is just buying and putting an RFID tag in a calf's ear has no value. If that number isn't tied to something, whether it's source verification or source and age verification or a program or branded program or breed or something, or if you have a system at your shoot that you use RFID for a purpose other than some form of market value, you use it just to manage cattle. I know people that that put them in their cows and calves just because their data collection system can utilize it and make it work just like clockwork. It pays for itself that way for those people. So it's coming. It's not the greatest technology in the world as far as its applicability at every segment of the industry so that we can make it an easily transferable process, but I think we'll get there. But I can tell you from a verified program standpoint that 100% of our data inquiries today are done with RFID scans.
Bob, you want to add some thoughts, comments in that area?
From a producer standpoint, we implemented EID and through the Country Natural Beef Program basically due to the record-keeping system that we had. Through our finance office, trying to keep track of individual carcass data, individual performance data on 60,000 head of cattle was starting to bog down that particular segment of our program. So we implemented an EID tag. On my level, what I am waiting for is the software so that I can EID that calf at birth, enter all the records on that calf through my operation, and then have all the data that's processed after it leaves my place incorporated into the same thing so it's not such a record-keeping nightmare on our part. So when that software is developed, we've had problems with 100% reads. We're getting better and better at it. Some of these packing houses, there's a lot of electricity and interference with some of the reads. So there's some problems. There's some technology that needs to be worked out. But when we can get it to where it's simple to plug in data at all levels and it comes right back to the source or the cow, I think it'll be huge as far as a record-keeping system.
This question also relates to the EID system from the audience. How do you see the value of the EID or source of age verification when it does not follow the cut to the meat counter? I mean, we start at the producer level. They're identified. They start through the process, but ultimately it's a product going to the consumer. Are we going to lose the value?
Well, I mean, right now the people that are using it are scheduling, for example, in an export verification program right now, they have to schedule cattle that have that known identification and that device in the ear with the data behind it. They schedule those cattle for a very specific time period on a kill floor so that they can segregate that product and know that it qualifies for that prospect. So that individual identification is not following that cut all the way to the retail counter. But what it is doing is it is qualifying a batch of product for that qualifies for a certain niche or an export component or whatever it is that the process is. Having said that, I think what I talked about earlier on the DNA question, I don't think that solves a lot of recall and exposure and liability issues that retailers and packers and hamburger processors and those kind of people have. But I do think that it does have a market value component in and of itself today, just because the industry is adapted to the use of the technology that we have right now.
The most value that we receive is not on a specific meat cut, but it's more like offal products in our particular deal, and it's tongues. We utilize the other cuts that we can send to Japan. We use them here in the U.S. We have had some requests from some of our retail partners that would like us to track individual cattle back to the cut. We're doing a little bit of research on that because they're wanting to start selling the local aspect. If their stores are in Texas or if they're in Minnesota, they would like Minnesota producers or beef to be marketed within those. They have an hour time. If they're 7.5 or 8 hours away, then they call that local. And so that's an area that we are looking at. But it's going to be more of a packing house issue than on our part.
Here's a great question that somebody posed, and I'm sure that there's others out there thinking of the same type of thing. The question is that I'm a young producer getting started in the business. I don't have a lot of cows, so I'm a fairly small operator, but I know I should be doing some things. What advice would you give me of in your mind, the two or three most important things that as somebody getting started, you'd say, I think you need to do these things that will help you out financially in the long run to add value? Those two or three things would be? These guys ask easy questions, don't they? They get to start less? You've identified them? Okay.
Well, I guess, again, I'd go back to how big do you plan to be, and is your environment a big impact of what breeds that you're going to be raising? When you decide what breed of cattle that you want to get into, I would align yourself with someone who is kind of a leader within that breed who understands the entire beef industry. And when you do that, you know, if they'll kind of take you under their wing, they can get you started in the right on the right path. But if you're just getting started, it's a whole lot easier to get started towards the top than it is in the middle or the bottom. And you know, I heard a phrase a while back that the most expensive thing that you can have on your place is a cheap bull. And I believe that if you are getting started, go to a reputation breeder, get reputation cattle that have a history, and try and buy as good a quality as you can, because it'll sure save you a lot of time in the long run than trying to start at the bottom and building up when guys are already 10, 15 years ahead of you.